Hi, we are today with Eugene Su, and he's from Microsoft Information Security, particularly on the ACE team. But I'll let Eugene introduce himself and tell us a little bit about your background.
Cool. So my name is Eugene, and I work for ACE team, so Assessment Consulting and Engineering team. So I'm a senior security engineer for ACE team for about 2 years now. And my main job is to do a find security bug, protect Microsoft from getting hacked, or find the bugs before the bad guys do.
Great. So how security? I know that security is not, it's some sort of like an acquired knowledge. We're not born knowing about it. So how did you end up working on security?
Right. So I was in a BizTalk team for it was a while ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. So I've always been interested in security, hearing all the buffer overflows, and it has always intrigued me since college days. And there was a security bug bash where all the guys just got together and then tried to find security bug in the product. And then I got really engaged, got really excited. And then after that, I found a few security bugs, of course, and then I said, well, I want to do it full-time. And then I tried to look for another job at Microsoft around just security full-time. And I got into Exchange I was there for 2 years, shipping 2000 and Exchange 2007. So that's how I got into it.
So we've been hearing a lot about SDL, SLOB, and it got announced not that well ago, and we want to talk a little bit on the development phase, and that's why here we are with you. What are your thoughts on SDLLOB and how it got branched out of the overall SDL?
Right. So the SDL and SDLLOB, the main difference is, of course, there's LOB at the end of it, so it's line of business application. So the main difference was in this video, we mainly talk about development or implementation. You may not see that much different because maybe if you are developing a web application, it could be LLB app, it could be a package product. So you will still see cross-site scripting, you will mitigate it the same way. So SQL injection, you will mitigate it the same way. The main difference between the two would be a little bit before the development phase. It's more like how you assess the risk. So say I was with Exchange 2017 for 2 years. When we design Exchange, we had to assume the worst, right? We could not assume, because the military could use Exchange to send order, all the top secret information around using their system. At the same time, it could be just used by someone hosting it, and then it's just for their own use, and then it's not really important. Even that it gets exploited, it's not the end of the world for them. But it's uncertain. When I develop a software, I have to assume the worst. But when I develop a line of business apps, I know what is going to be in my SQL Server. It either is high business impact data, low business impact data. So I know the risk, so I can calculate it, and then I can do my threat modeling. So if you see the video earlier, so we talk about threat modeling, risk assessment, that would make the difference. So you would not assume the worst because you know what the data would be. So it's more like from the assessment perspective, that would be the main difference between the two methodologies.
Oh, that's pretty good. So then if now in the development phase particularly, what can you call out as security pillars inside the development phase? What are the things that you do in your daily job, because you review applications every day? Can you share what are some of the key things that we need to look for as far as security goes?
Right. So there are a few areas that I usually look at, because I for my day job, I look at an application for the newly released Bing.com. I help secure that. I work with a lot of business applications, the LOB apps for Microsoft, all the internal applications. We help review that. So there are a few things that you would want to think about. Of course, the one thing is authentication. So how do user get authenticated before they get to the application? There are a few ways for you. There are a few ways to do that. And so they can talk about authorization. So once the user is authenticated, so you know who that person is, well, how much privilege should that person have on the application? So that would be authorization. And then the third one would be a configuration. So how do you do secure configuration of your system so that it can be secure from a configuration perspective? Yeah, the last one would be we have we do code review also on the application that forward to us for review, and then we have a few checklists, and then we go through them, and then so we find out the security bugs for them, and from there we usually find the catchphrase in the industry, right? Cross-site scripting, SQL injection, buffer overflows. Usually we don't have that many because it's most of our line of business application use managed code, so you usually don't see that. But in case there are some C++ applications, so buffer overflow would be another one. So those are the four main areas that or pillars that we'd be looking at.
Can you get a little bit deeper there on what are the key things that I'm looking for?
Right. So let's talk about code review first, and then because authentication, authorization is kind of part of that, so I would mention that as part of the code review, the mental checklist that I have. So the first thing that you would want to worry about is that use two approaches. Well, two scan, I guess. So one thing is that it's really important you do your threat modeling. So from your threat modeling, then you would know where your high risk areas are, and then you want to think about where your high risk area are, and you focus on just that, because you only have limited time usually when you do code review. And as you imagine, you may take you say 3 months, 4 months to develop so many lines of code. You really don't have time to look at every line of code. So you really want to look at the high risk area first, right? So that's one thing. So that's one way to look at it. Focus on high risk area from threat modeling. That's one thing. Another thing is that I will look for sensitive word. Say for example, password would be a sensitive word, credential, live ID, secret key or encryption, hashing. Those are I'm pretty rudimentary, so I sometimes use Notepad, open the file and search for it. Sometimes I would use Visual Studio and look for those places. And for the whole code base, I would just look through everything. I'm not even going to care about high risk or low risk. I'm just going to look at every single line that say password. And then I do that. That's more like what I call horizontal scanning, rather than just looking at the high risk area. So after those areas are covered, so what are the stuff that you look for though, say in a high risk area? Say I will try to look for authentication code, authorization code. So for authentication, you will want to think about it. Come back from the threat modeling, as you may hear, I keep going back to threat modeling because it's really important to your to understanding your application and also code reviewing it. So authentication, you will want to think about, well, how do you do authentication? Is it Windows authentication? I'm trying to think about Windows-centric role here. So for the, may not cover the Unix side of things, but say you're using Windows authentication, Windows Live ID, you're using just strict username and password, your own username and password. Well, if that's the case, if you're using a username and password, well, how do you save the password? Do you put it in a database? Do you put just a raw password? But if you would see that you would put raw password in the database, that's always a bad idea. So at least you want to hash the password before you save it in the database, so that when the database gets compromised, you don't lose all your password in one shot, right? So at most you lose the hash of the password. So if some developer actually already hashed them, well, what hashing algorithm do they use? Make sure that they don't use MD5 or some really old algorithm. Use at least a sharp one for my standard. Maybe if you hear the same video like 5 years later, then don't hold me accountable. Probably by then, sharp one will be broken. So you want to use the next available algorithm. So that's more like from authentication, stuff that you want to look at. For authorization, then you want to check, well, how do they check for authorization? Do they have a group in a database? Say, well, these five people have access to this functionality. Do they have a membership group type thing where, oh, this is admin group, this is contributor group, this is just regular user group? If that's the case, then when you do a testing, that goes back to the black box and gray box time. Sometimes it may be hard to just look at the code and see that everything is blocked. So you may want to try, well, get different user account and try to log on and see whether you can do different things. Say you log on as a regular user, can you do not an admin, maybe the next level like a contributor could do. And some trick that I would like, you would point out is that, say if you know a contributor access to a certain URL, say, domain.com/contributor/blah, right? So you will try to log on and log on as a regular user, and then manually type into your browser slash domain.com/contributor. Try to force it in, and sometime you may be surprised, and you may find a bug just by doing that. So there's some trick that you may be hard for you to find it from code only, and you may want to do some little black box penetration testing. So there's something to think about for authorization also. So those are, and also for configuration. You always want to look at your web.config, and then if you're doing ASP.NET, so make sure the debug flag is off during production. It's fine for development, but make sure that the flag is off in production. So if you have validate requests, it's on by default. It's a really good way to stop cross-site scripting. It's on by default unless you specifically turn it off. So if you don't see that validate request thing on your web.config, you're fine. So. And those are, and also make sure there are no secret in the config file, like password or encryption key there. If there are encryption key there or any secret, there's a way for you to encrypt that web.config. ASP.NET provide encryption on secret things, so you will encrypt it and put it on your registry for you, basically. So there are big ways for you to do that. Yeah, for ASP.NET, if you want to encrypt anything, any secret in your web.config file, and it will be transparent to your applications, so you can do everything, do your all the application, as just put all at during the even during the testing or during development, everything is free and clear there. But then when you're building production, you could just encrypt that, and then it will be all transparent to your code. It doesn't change a line, so you could do that from a deployment perspective. And those are a few things that I usually look at when I do a code review, and that's something to think about.
And what about tools? I know that you mentioned there's code analysis tools. There are like anti-X libraries. Is there any in particular that you want to talk about or mention that is actually used in your team?
Sure. So we use cat.net extensively, and actually it is a requirement for all the external, so if we need to release anything outside the application, outside the company, so you think about Bing, you think about all the major applications that we release outside, they have to go through cat.net if they have a web component. So it is it's still a requirement before any app can be released with internal to Microsoft. So they have to do that. And cat.net is used for finding cross-site scripting bugs and SQL injection bugs. So that is basically dynamically looking at all the DLL, looking at binary and try to look for code pattern. If it's missing certain things, you're going to flag it and say, well, you don't do your encoding using you don't encode your output before you send it, maybe cross-site scripting and all that. So cat.net is one, and the anti-XSS is more for preventing. So if you know you're going to output any thing on the screen, and then if you don't do any encoding, then cross-site scripting could happen. But then you can use anti-XSS. That's the library that we use, and it can be applied in different contexts. It can be applied in JavaScript, in the context of a script or URL. Or in the code, so where you can use that, and it will be a pretty comprehensive way to mitigate cross-site scripting. So that's why it's called anti-XSS. So those are the few tools that we use when we do code reviews, and also the few others, FXCOP and all that too. So, but yeah.
So it seems that is no secret. I mean, we are empowering users to use the same tools that we use here in Microsoft. Use the same processes and the same checklist, basically. And one last question. I've been hearing also, penetration testing as an alternative to code reviews and whitelisting and all that.
Right.
So other, options to how to, bulletproof your code.
Right.
Have you had any thoughts or experiences? Have you done any?
Sure. So penetration testing means a lot of different things to different people. I mean, traditionally, penetration testing means, say, I'm going after the network. I'm going to see whether I can hack through the network. They have open port there. Let me try to see what's the software behind that open port and try to crack through that. So that's the traditional sense of penetration testing. When we say penetration testing in AST, what we usually mean is we'll try to basically almost equivalent to security testing. So we will do code review, as we talk about authentication, authorization, looking at finding code, looking to see, well, are you encoding your output to avoid cross-site scripting? Are you using any dynamic SQL so that you can you try to mitigate SQL injection and you don't want to use dynamic SQL? So those are the things that you would want to think about for SQL, for penetration testing. And the most importantly, though, you want to do a combination, especially you have access to the code, because if you don't, you're basically putting yourself on the same level playing field with the external attackers. And their advantage is that imagine you're trying to secure your house. All you need to do is that you need to block every hole in your house in order to block a thief from coming in. But a thief has to find only one place, or there's one crack in your crawl space or on your roof or something, or your window is not locked or something, they can come in. So your job is really much harder than the attacker, because they only need to find one place and you have to block everything. So if you have access to the code and you're not using it, you're kind of crippling yourself, against the attack from external hackers. So you really want to do a combination. So you will want to do your traditional penetration testing, scan your network, using external scanning tools, do that, do your network, secure that. You also want to look at the code, do a code review, make sure that your authentication is doing well, authorization, cross-site scripting, SQL injection, or cross-site request forgery, all the common stuff. You want to look at it from the code. You also want to do it at the application level, do like a little penetration, do a black box penetration testing. I would try it out, and then usually what I do is I go back and forth. I would try something on the site. Oh, I find something that looks suspicious. Then I would go back and look at the code and find out, make sure that I nail down all the bugs in the code regarding that. So I go back and forth, or I start with the code and I find some stuff. Oh, it looks suspicious, and I would want to confirm that on the site. So it's kind of black box. So I kind of go back and forth, and we call it gray box, because you have white box penetration testing and black box penetration testing, and black and white, you mix together, it become gray. So that's what we call it, gray box penetration testing. So, and that's a methodology that we apply pretty consistently within ACE for all the MSIT app, all the LOB applications. We help Live team, Windows Live, MSN teams regarding their web application, MSCom. So that's pretty applied pretty consistently for all the apps in different places at Microsoft.
That's good. So that means it's good to hear that, because some people think it's one way or the other, right? Is it either white or black?
Right.
And I think that's a good combination that you just described. So, it's not even getting away from SDL. It's like, empowering yourself as much as you can.
Right.
So I think that's a lot of information. I think it's very valuable. We have a lot of pointers right now to people. We point them, to all the tools that you just mentioned, the steps on patterns and practices to, so people can learn how to do their own code reviews. And I appreciate the time. I think it seems like you have a lot of expertise coming from a product and now working on LOB. What better way to empower our internal tools, right?
Right.
Let's keep these videos coming.
Let's do that. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Eugene.